I guess almost all of us already back. So let's begin. Before I start, these brochures. Again, you are more than welcome to pick, to grab one of them, as well as the Our Family picture. By the way, it's a little outdated picture. Was taken 2 years ago. We are a little bit older at this point. But, all of us. So, of course, most of the brochure is talking about Chosen People Ministries and about the work of organization, little history of organization. So, you're welcome to read it. And if you are getting interest, you can go even online. It has some short part of my testimony. And I would really appreciate it. Well, you have a family picture, but even if you don't, just grab this one. Please pray for us. You know, being a missionary, missionaries rely on different things, not only to prayers, but first and foremost on prayers. You know, doesn't matter if I get my salary or not. I was called by God to serve Him in Israel to share the gospel, so I will do it anyway. It's nice when you have, like, if you are full time, you have something to support your family as well. But even if not, that's not the best way, but it's still the way. But in order to do that, I need to be covered with your prayers. So I would really appreciate if, like, you will take this white part of this brochure, like this little coupon, you will fill it with your information, your name, your address, your email address, whatever. And before you leave, give it to me. And this way, I send it to Chosen People Ministries, and this way you're going to start receiving our monthly prayer letter. It's not a big chunk of reading. It's like less than 400 words. So, and when I write it once a month, I send it to Chosen People Ministry, and they do some work making it sound like English. So, and then they send to everybody on our partners list. So you will then know how to pray about us, what's going on in our lives. Once in a while, just not really often, but once in a while, when I have time, I write bigger letter with more information, with pictures to those who gave me their email addresses. So please, don't hesitate. Write it down. Give it to me before you leave. Don't think that you will send it tomorrow or in 2 days to Chosen People Ministers, because most likely you won't. That's from experience. The other thing, when you fill it up, please try to write it the way that I will understand what you were writing. Because quite a few times in my life, I had the email address, I wrote it down exactly as I thought it's written in this coupon, and I send it, and it comes back, not existent. No, I have no idea. I lost the person. The person lost contact with us. Probably no one of us will die because of that, but the person wanted to hear from us, and maybe Lord wanted the person to hear about us and pray about us. Anyway, there are a few other options on these brochures, including the ministry involvement with, like, part-time ministry involvement with Chosen People Ministries, and more practical involvement in our ministry in Israel. That's between you and God. Okay? I don't go there. It's not my business. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe some of you will get some words about it from God. So I would really appreciate it. So anyway. But let's go back to teaching part. And today's subject, does it work? Oh, no, this works. Supposed to work. Yes. So we all know that there's some conflict which is going on in the Middle East, don't we? Do we follow the news? Well, when you follow the American news, it's, you know, even this way you can hear about it. So usually American news is telling more about prices for the gas station in your town. And you don't know what's going on really all around the world, but we have conflict, and you probably heard about it. So I'm an Israeli, so you sort of probably would expect me not to be self-hating Israeli. You know, meaning that I am not pro-Palestinian, so you can expect it. Well, you can get another speaker from the area who would be not pro-Israeli, but rather pro-Palestinian. Whatever. You can get different points of view, but what is right? Which point is better than another one, or more balanced, or, you know, how can we decide? Well, we are believers here. And as believers, we're supposed to turn right there, aren't we? So what we're going to do today, I will not talk about politics, almost not, just a bit, you know, for flavor. But Bible, I will read a lot. You already know that I'm from former Soviet Union, and you know that English is the at least third language I know. I have like some knowledge of Ukrainian language, and I can understand the Polish language when the Polish people speak slow. But main languages are Russian, that's my mother tongue, Hebrew, my second language, and English, my third language. And in all of this, including Russian, because I left so many years ago that country, and you know, my Russian is really good. But I have an accent, because I speak different languages, like on a daily basis. So in every single language I speak, I have an accent. And you're going to enjoy it. Enjoy it or die. So anyway, so I'm going to read a lot from the Bible. You are welcome to follow me in your Bibles. If not, I have a text on the screen. It's English Standard Version. I wouldn't try to argue it's better or worse. I learned in my school, which is Trinity Evangelical Divinity School, that it's, academically speaking, it's not a bad one. So if you're willing to follow the King James or NIV or New American Standard, sure, or whatever version you use. So, Bible. And we will start right now from the book of Are we moving? Yes. Book of Genesis, chapter 12. And we read, "Go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you, and I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great. And so you shall be a blessing, and I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth will be blessed." So what's the story behind it? Who is talking to whom? Who is blessing, who is cursing, and who's supposed to go? God speaks to Abram. Person, well, it's not Abraham yet, it's the guy who was born in the Aramean Haran, you know, the city where Laban later lived, you know, his nephew. Then he relocated with his father down to Ur, which is Persian Gulf, and then they moved back to Haran, and here God calls him to go to some particular land, and he says, "Leave everything and go somewhere which I will show you." So he even don't tell him clearly where he gonna take him. But if you will decide to follow my call, I will show you where I gonna take you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you, and I will make your name great. And I will bless those who bless you, and those who curse you, I will curse them, and I will bless all the families over the earth in your name. So seven I will, for just believe me, follow me. Well, if you take a little history, you would understand that the world where Abraham lived and the cities where he spent 75 years of his life were pretty pagan. They were worshiping the god of the moon. And despite, well, we know that his name Abram, or Avramu probably, means my father is great. And taking into account that later, his, I mean, like, the daughter of Laban stole the idols of her father. Well, this home kind of made idols, like of this size, like sometimes smaller, sometimes bigger. They were representing the home cult of the ancestors. So they were, in addition to all of this, they were worshiping their ancestors. And even when you worship not just the big god and you come to the big temple and you can touch this huge idol and you can bring the libation or your sacrifices to this altar and you have like pretty physical servers, female servers, servers of this or that deity that which you can continue worshiping the Lord, the different, like this particular idol, this particular way. I mean, it was all, you know, you can see it, you can touch it, you can hear it, you can smell it, and you're 75 years old. I mean, like, good chunk of your life is already, well, let's put it this way, you have some experiences. And now, he hears somebody. We know that later God speaks to him and appears to him. But at this point, God just speaks to him and he can see this God. He doesn't know who he is. He can't touch him. Never heard about him before. And anyway, he decides to follow this God and God puts it as a credit toward the righteousness of Abram. Now we go to Genesis 13, verses 14 and 17. God speaks to Abram when he lives in Beersheba. Well, actually, at this point in Hebron, which is a few miles south from Jerusalem. Now lift up your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, and westward, for all the land which you see, I will give it to you and to your descendants. And the time frame? Forever. When forever ends? Never. Okay? That's the Bible so far. Well, we will have to figure out who are descendants of Abraham still. But anyway, just some basics. Genesis 15, verses 18 to 21. On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abraham, saying, "To your descendants I have given this land, from the river, or better, the brook of Egypt, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates." You remember this story when God tells Abram to bring the animals and to cut them in two and put them apart. And then he puts deep sleep on Abram and, you know, you remember the story, aren't you? So what is behind that story? That in that period of time, in that setting of historical setting, when let's say two cities, like or towns or whatever, like kind of different areas were fighting with each other, let's say about the field which was in between, and then they finally decided to cut the treaty to divide this field in the middle. So they were the leaders, the kings of these cities were getting together and they were bringing animals and cutting them in half and putting them aside. And then they were walking, both of them, were walking in between of these animals, cut animals, by this symbolically saying, okay, so if I will broke this treaty, so maybe something like that happened, like maybe my destiny, like to be cut in half. So both of them had to go there. It was the signature, if you want, of the treaty, of the covenant. In this case, Lord wants to create the covenant with Abraham the way everybody will understand it, including Abraham. He is the guy of his times. But God knows that Abraham or his descendants not necessarily will have an unbreakable relationship with him. So what he does, he puts the deep sleep on Abraham that he will not be cut in pieces in the future or his descendants. So he proclaims the covenant, the treaty, but he himself, one and only, goes in between all these pieces, meaning that, okay, who can cut God into halves? Is it possible? No. That's the symbolic meaning for the people to understand what's going on. But what he says, that I'm doing it to tell you that I'm not going to break this treaty. And because you cannot physically put me into the same condition of these animals, this treaty will be never broken, ever. And I do it because of my will. I proclaimed it. I put you to the position that you don't have to go there. So it's on me. All of this treaty, all of this covenant is my free will. It will never be broken. I promised. Doesn't matter what you or your descendants will do, it will take place anyway. Now, let's see the map. Okay, that's using different passages of the Bible. We know the approximate borders of the promised land, and there how they go. And by the way, that's the Brook of Egypt. It's not Nilus. Nobody promised to Israel to go so far to Egypt, though we already had some borders at some periods of times. Like, well, by Suez, not by Nilus. But anyway, and River Euphrates is here. This is what God promised. These are the borders of modern Israel, including the West Bank and Golan Heights. By the way, excluding Gaza Strip. That's, as you can see, it will be like that. So the borders God promised to us are a little bit more than we have today, even including the West Bank and the Golan Heights, despite of what United Nations or even your government think about it. Well, I don't say that we have to go right now and take over these places, but it will happen. Guess when? Who will be the leader, Israeli leader, who will establish Israel in these borders? Do you have any idea? Amen. When Jesus will come, he himself will establish these borders for Israel, despite what the world societies, Ban Ki-moon or whatever his name is, or European Union, and or even some Israeli politicians believe about it. Believe it or not, today I read in the news that yesterday a young Arab guy, jumped into the police car with a knife. The policeman first thing, he closed the window. And the guy started to hit the police car window with a knife. And then from the other door, policeman showed up, took his gun and put the guy down. And then they took him into the car, brought him to the hospital, and the guy passed away. As much peaceful as it possible. And then it was the beginning of the huge revolt in the Arab villages and neighborhoods. And you don't know what's going on today in the media all around the world saying, Israelis killing Palestinians. And even our politicians today said, well, not only this policeman who killed this Arab guy has to be in jail, but also the head of the minister of internal security has to be put to trial. Like, give me a break. This guy tried to kill the policeman. What would be your policeman doing? I mean, like, anybody else's country's policeman, what would do if somebody will try to kill him? Everybody will say, okay, good job, praise God, nobody killed our policeman. Well, everybody but not Israel. Whatever we do in order to protect ourselves or our streets or just peace in our land, we will be put down, even by our own people. Whatever. That's what I meant by flavor, talking about the politics. Okay. Next passage is Genesis 26. God confirms this covenant to Isaac. The Lord appeared to him. No, Isaac saw the Lord in front of his eyes. Do not go to down to Egypt. Dwell in the land of which I shall tell you. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with you and will bless you. For to you and to your offspring I will give all these lands, and I will establish the oath that I swore to Abraham your father. I will multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven, and will give to you to your offspring all these lands. And in your offspring all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. Basically, God speaks to the second son of Abraham, Isaac, not the first son, Ishmael, and reestablished the Abrahamic covenant with him. So we got some line of this treaty got cut with Abraham. Now, next chapter, Genesis 28. And behold, well, that's the story. Jacob was just pretty tricky with his brother, twin brother Esau, the firstborn. And Esau is really not in a good mood, is hoping to kill Jacob pretty soon. So Jacob flees to his uncle Laban in modern northern Syria, and in the place which later was called Beit El, which some seriously hesitate that it has something to do with the biblical Beit El, which is north of Jerusalem. But anyway, that's the place. He takes a night sleep there, and he dreams and sees the ladder up to the heaven. And if you can imagine this kind of angelic playground ladder, and you have the angels going up and down, up and down, up and down, like they have fun. And if it's not enough, on top of it, there's a Lord stands and says something. We're going to read what he says in a minute. But why am I doing it like this way? Well, we don't really know what the word ladder in the biblical Hebrew really means. So it kind of, it's totally understood that this concept is talking about something which is about elevation. You can go up and go down using this ladder, sulam in Hebrew. In modern Hebrew, sulam is actually the ladder. But, and I've seen the pictures where the angels, like, you know, going like one on one side, another one on the other side. It's just really cool. But I don't understand why the ladder is supposed to stand on something up above, especially when you have the person standing on top of it, whatever, like this, like this, like this, whatever. So some believe that it was, well, first of all, stairway somewhere up. Some believe that it was the altar in front of the heavenly temple. And the angels, as priests later in Jerusalem temple, had to go up to serve with the altar and go down. And on top of it, on top of the altar, were supposed to be flame and the flame of the sacrifices going on in front of the Lord. The Lord himself was standing. By the way, this belief, this theory goes not from the Christian perspective. That's totally Jewish perspective. That it was the altar to the Holy Temple. And I found it extremely interesting to figure out that on top of it, at the altar, where the flames are, God stood. And by the way, I do believe, that's my faith, you know, would you agree or not, that's, you know, we don't have time to discuss this today, so everyone will stay with his own beliefs. But I do think that every time you read in the Old Testament, when God meets with the person face to face, whenever God speaks to the person, including the same God who gave the Torah, the laws, to Moses on Mount Horeb, it was Jesus before he was born. So basically Jacob sees Jesus, if I'm correct, at the spot where the sacrifice is supposed to be burned in the heavenly temple. And he tells him I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and to your offspring. Your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west, to the east, and to the north, and to the south. And in you and your offspring shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. Lord said. Okay? Same Abrahamic covenant a bit ago reestablished with Isaac, the youngest son of Abraham, the only son through Sarah, and now to Jacob, the youngest twin of Isaac. Later, in Genesis 32, 20 years later, Jacob gets back from Esau. Remember the story. They got back, they passed the Jabbok River in the east, and, you know, all the herds of, you know, all these animals that he had and his families and tents and everything. And he sends the people, that was actually the border of Esau territory. And he sends the messengers to Esau to say, "Hello, brother is back. How you doing?" And they come back and say, "Have you seen the news from the Syria with ISIS? Like getting their, you know, ammunition, get into the trucks and getting toward you, really, that's what I think when I look at these wild guys riding the trucks in the wilderness. Well, that's approximately the same idea what happened when Esau learned that Jacob finally back. He took 400 men with their swords and they got to greet his brother. And guess what they had in mind? So, and Jacob got the same idea. So he sent, first of all, he sent a lot of gifts to his brother, separately, that in order to may impress him on the way. So, and then he put two of his wives separately, one wife, second wife, one concubine, second concubine, everyone with her children, and far away from each other. Why? Because to bring the expression for Esau when he will come that Jacob is everywhere at his land? No, because if Esau will start killing somebody, others may have a chance to flee. But then something really weird happens. He turns back, it was evening, and he goes back to the Jabbok River, to the other side, to stay alone. Why in the world? And then story continues even more awkward, if you want, or weird way. Somebody appears there in the wilderness and they start to wrestle and wrestle through the night. And this somebody cannot, you know, overcome Jacob. Jacob is like really strong man, by the way, of 96 years old of age. And but this guy cannot overcome him. So what he does, he grabs his gun and shoot him. Or he calls for help. What he does? Well, he touches him gently. And this touch leaves this man named Jacob handicapped to the rest of his life, which was about 27 years more. If he couldn't overcome Jacob, and it was so really bothering him, why he didn't touch him in before? Or why he didn't touch his nose, and it got from the other side of his head? Or why didn't he blow to him and he would just be blown away? And after all, the angelic being, as we usually think. Well, for some reason, it took some different scenario. So what I believe was really happening. So Jacob getting back, and despite that it was 20 years ago, and not many of us remember what we said 20 years ago, he totally remembered what he heard on that ladder, so to call, on top of this ladder, the person which probably was standing at the place of the sacrifice told him, "I will keep you and I will return you and I will be with you, and before you'll get your offspring will cover the land and every family will be blessed in your offspring, I will not leave you. Nothing will change my mind. And he goes back alone to seek the face of this Lord he saw 20 years ago. And what he finds there, he suddenly sees this same Lord he saw 20 years ago passing by, kind of walking into his own direction. And what Jacob probably did, he grabbed his feet. And how the wrestling looked through the night was probably something like that. And then at some point, well, by the way, his name was Jacob. Do you know the meaning of that? You remember how he got this name. He grabbed the first thing he did when he was born, he grabbed his older brother by the heel, which is Ekev in Hebrew. But Yaakov, why Yaakov? When I was getting here, when I left Green Bay, I just kind of, my GPS showed me that I'm going to be here about 1:45. And I remember that our meeting is around 2. I mean, 2 p.m. sharp, actually. And it made me a little nervous because it was like hour and a half drive here. So I was trying to drive the speed limit because, you know, you have really nice policemen here in the States. I already get a chance to meet with some. And they were really helpful, and so far I didn't get any tickets. But I was driving, you know, the speed limit, and I've seen quite a few of them on the highway. But when I was getting like side roads to get to this place, there was like one line, one way. And of course, today is Saturday, like tomorrow is Sunday. We got a lot of nice people who just got their lunch somewhere, the digestion is on, and they have to drive home, you know, and they just... like 55 miles per hour, who cares? So, and then the Israeli driver, by the way, if you will ever come to Israel, and you will see what does it mean to be Israeli driver, but I'm a good one of them. But still, I'm an Israeli, I have my temperament, and I have time frame, and I don't understand why you should drive 40 when it's 55. So an Israeli waits some like window in between like the upcoming traffic, and I see that it's not the line is actually, I can't pass him. I press the acceleration, and you know your cars here in the States are pretty powerful ones. I get much faster than this guy in front of me, and I am passing him. Well, when I plan to pass him, in Hebrew it will mean I gonna Yaakov him. So the name Jacob actually means to pass by. So in order to pass somebody by, you have to be fast. Sharp thinking, sharp move, like fast moving. That's what Jacob was always till this touch. So, and then Jacob is keep holding the Lord, and it hurts. And he says, what do you want from me? He said, I will not let you go until you will bless me. Well, have you ever seen in any scene in the Bible which speaks about the angelic encounter, somebody asking angel to bless him? Frankly. Angel is the messenger, is the guy on the motorcycle who brought the pizza to your house, if you want. A little bit more powerful. Just a little. Maybe it doesn't look like that. So, but he realized it is the same Lord he saw 20 years ago. He said, I will not let you go until you will bless me. Blessing in Hebrew is levarech, bracha. Until you will berech me. The same root with the word berech, the knee. When we ask the Lord for a blessing, we ask him to put us on our knees. So he said, what is your name now? He said, well, he doesn't know, huh? Well, Yaakov, one who passes by. Okay, from now on, Mr. Fast Moving, you're not so fast moving. So your name will be not Yaakov, Jacob, but Israel, because you were fighting with God and with men and prevailed. And the setting, if we don't think carefully about what really happened there, like they were wrestling. No, they were not wrestling. So what does it mean, the word Israel? Isra, meaning one who wrestles, one who fights with. El, God. So fighting with God. The meaning, really possible, and really I think what is actually meant here by the Lord. You are the one who was fighting and will be fighting with the Lord, with God at your side. So you don't have to be fast, you don't have to pass anyone right now. You are Israel, and I'm standing at your side. So, of course, Jacob had 12, you know the rest of the story. Esau changed his mind, and they got nice relationship, and everybody got spared, and even he didn't want to take the gifts, but Jacob insisted, so Esau got even more wealth than he was the day before. But anyway, Jacob still alive, and he had 12 children, 12 sons, actually. He had more children, but 12, like one more daughter. 12 sons. And these sons of Jacob, became known to the people around them as sons of Israel, because their father, at the age of 96, decided to change his name, Israel. Now they are the sons of Israel. And now their descendants are called the sons of Israel. All of this story with the covenant was about God making the covenant with a person, 75 years old person, who was not able to deliver, like to make children anymore. And his wife was not able to deliver babies anymore. But God, if it was not for sure enough, he was 75, she was 65. And even being much younger, she was not able to bring the children to this world. He waited for 25 more years. Just to be sure that it's like, you know, not an accident. And he made her to deliver baby out of this man. Miracle. And the miracle, by the way, get to the point when Abraham was able to make children even after Sarah passed away. He had more children from his concubines, but the Bible is pretty clear. They never got connected to this covenant. He sent them away with a great gift. So, but the covenant was with Isaac. The covenant continued to Jacob, not to Esau. Jacob had 12 sons. The sons of Israel, they got their own children. And then the group of people whom you call the Jewish people today, they are descendants of Jacob. They are sons of Israel. They may be good or bad, right or wrong, believe in God or not believe in God, but they have the covenant with God through their father, their grandfather, and great-grandfather Abraham. And it is not depend on our desire or our will or our attitude. Depends on him. Okay, but since we're talking about conflict between Israel and the Arab world, let's talk about those whom Arab people claim to be their forefather. Genesis 16. The mother of Ishmael, the Egyptian girl Hagar, is fleeing Sarah. An angel of the Lord meets her on the way and said to her, "Behold, you are pregnant and shall bear a son. You shall call his name Ishmael, God heard, because the Lord has listened to your affliction. He shall be a wild donkey of a man, his hand against everyone and everyone's hand against him, and he shall dwell over against all his kinsmen." I don't know if it is an explanation or it talks about Arab people. Sounds like that, but I'm not sure. Well, to me, it sounds like, okay, when Esau, older brother of Jacob, saw when Yitzhak sent his younger Jacob to get his wife from Laban, from the Semitic group of people, his relatives, and Esau already had two wives, out of Canaanite girls, and he understood, well, he loved his father, by the way, he understood that his father doesn't like the Canaanite girls. He went to his uncle Ishmael and ask one of his daughters, Basmat, or you know, I think in English it's written Basmat as well, to be his wife. And here he have a Semitic wife, and it was not what actually pleased Isaac anyway, but the children of Ishmael, of Ishmael's daughter Basmat and Esau, son of Isaac, relocated to Arabian Peninsula. And because of that, it's kind of accepted that Arabs are descendants of these people. It's impossible to prove, by the way, academically speaking, but let's take it as, I think it's like, it sounds like right. So, what Bible has to say about Ishmael again? So Genesis 17, we read to Abraham. God speaks to Abraham about, you know, blessing of his great reward, and Sarah will have a son. And Abraham, what does? He laughs, and he Itzhak in Hebrew. He is laughing, and God said, "No, but Sarah," and asked the Lord, "Maybe Ishmael will be fine." He said, "No, but Sarah, your wife, shall bear you a son, and you shall call his name Itzhak, because you were Itzhak. So you were laughing, so that will be the name of your son. Don't laugh too much. I will establish my covenant with him as an everlasting covenant for his offspring after him. As for Ishmael, I have heard you. Behold, I have blessed him and will make him fruitful and multiply him greatly. He shall father 12 princes, and I will make him into a great nation. But I will establish my covenant with Isaac, whom Sarah shall bear to you at this time next year." Isaac, Ishmael. Okay, now let's look into the history here. So at this point we have the creation, and this point we have today. Yeah? Okay, you may disagree with me. I do feel that the history of the humankind since the creation took about 6,000 years. Okay, I may be wrong. Some may disagree with me. Well, if not, that it will not be most accurate diagram you ever seen. But if it is right, so like this period is 2,000 years, and this period is 4,000 years, and 4,000 years ago, about 4,000 years ago, we got Abraham on the screen. But 400 years later, we got Exodus. So the sons of Israel moved to Egypt in the number of 70 people. And then, sometimes later, you know, I don't want to get into the details, which happened about 400 years after this covenant was established, they moved back to the promised land. Approximately at the same period of time, a little bit later, when they got into the land, it took about 40 years for them to get to the land, people who were known as the Sea People, or Philistines, people of Aegean region got to like conquer some seashores of Mediterranean in the land and become pretty hostile to Israelis. In 1042 BC, we got the first Jewish monarch, Saul, thank you. And then after almost 40 years, we got David, and 40 years later, we got Solomon. So we got Jewish monarchy. In the 4th century BC, we know that Greek people occupied the land, like Alexander the Great. And then in 165 BC, there was a Maccabean revolt when the Greeks were thrown out of the land. Some history. And then in 63 BC, Romans finally occupied the land. It took some time when they let the Jewish people to be independent, so like to some degree, and then they finally took over the land. And then, really interesting fact that it was 9th century BC, late 9th century BC, 100 years after the Jewish monarch was already ruling in Israel, There was written some document in which the word Arab was meant. The oldest document in which the word Arab was ever made was written 100 years later, after the Jewish monarch was ruling right here. And by the way, it was not in any connection to the land. It was a northern Arabian, like the guy located in the northern Arabian Peninsula. And of course, in 70 AD, we got fall of Jerusalem and destruction of the temple, Jerusalemite temple. Why am I telling you all of this? Well, because in 135, as a result of the uprising of Bar Kokhba, Roman Emperor Hadrianus, who was not really pro-Jewish, or basically he was one of the worst anti-Semites in our history, he covered the land with the blood of the Jewish people who didn't want him to be there. And then he renamed the city, Jerusalem, to Aelia Capitolina. And then he wanted to remain the name of this province of the Roman Empire, which was known as Judah, part of the Syria, bigger Syria. Syria, Judah. So, and he wanted to rename them, and he asked his historians, who were the worst enemies of Israel through the history? And the guy said, okay, there was a tribe called Peleset, whom Israelites called Plishtim, and they were talking in Latin, like using these terms. And I told you that the Sea people were from Aegean region, that's like closer to Greece. So, and they Plishtim, как бы Latin and Hebrew doesn't work together so good. So basically we got the name of this province, Syria Palestina. And the name was connected, well, 135 AD, and the name was connected not to Arab people who were mentioned first time in 9th century BC, 100 years after the Jewish king was ruling in Israel, but after the worst enemies of Israelis, the Aegean tribe. 500 years later, it was the first time when the Arab people who became Muslims at this point, 20 years ago, Muhammad got his first revelation. It was pretty young religion. So 638 AD, that's when the Arab Muslims took over Jerusalem for the first time in history. So why I'm telling you this part? Well, when you next time will use the word Palestinians, talking about the Arab people who live in the promised land of Israel, claiming that they were there forever and digging on the Temple Mount in order to destroy any historical evidence of Jewish presence there, and lying out loud in United Nations about their heritage, about their history, and everybody in the world just like turned to be extremely ignorant talking about Palestinians, Palestinian nation, Palestinian people, like Swedish government, out of all. You know, like last week, I was so terribly surprised to see that the first country in the world who actually proclaimed Palestine to be the state, they now relate to Palestine as the state. And do you know the reasons why? Because they have land, people, and the government. Do they believe that there was ever the state, indigenous Palestinian state in the land of, like, which was called Palestine since 135? Like, ruled by indigenous Palestinian leader. Even they today don't try to say that the Palestinian people speak Palestinian language. Everybody in the world knows that they are Arabs and they speak Arabic language. Some people know that Palestinian people were created by Soviet Union in 1964. And even in the mid of 80s, the Soviets were not, like, it was too wild to say that Palestinian people. They were calling them Arab people of Palestine. they were kind of putting aside Israel and its presence there, but like Palestine. Okay, today is wide accepted term. So the Arab people who live in the land of Israel, or ancient, well, it used to be for centuries, it used to be the province of different empires called Palestine. They happen to live there for whatever period of time they live there. I don't go so far. Some of them live for 100 years. Some of them a little bit more. Some of them just newcomers. So the Arab people got there in the 7th century AD. 500 years after the word Palestine was invented into the human vocabulary. 1,000 years after the Jewish monarch was ruling in this land. Some ideas. Now, why are they so unrested about getting there? Why are they fighting us all the time? Why are they, you know, as one of our former prime ministers, born in Milwaukee and raised up in Milwaukee, Golda Meir, said, the peace will come when the Arab people will start love their children more than they hate ours. So we are not trying to kill Arabs. They are trying to kill Jews. Not all of them, but that's their agenda. They don't want us to be in this land. We don't care. Okay? Why they don't want us to be in this land? Why in the world, you know, Arab people getting so unrested when somebody of the Jews is trying to just get up the Temple Mount? Not to say that we are not allowed to pray there. You know, till recently, the people, Jewish people, when they had to get and like, if you see that he is religious Jew, he has kippah, or like he is ultra-religious, you know, have particular outfit. If you want to get up there, you had to sign up the form that you are promising that you are not gonna do any religious activity, nor prayers, nor wearing anything. You just like you just come to pass by. Why in the world? Arab people can pray there. Why we don't? Just we don't. We even not talking about the temple. We're just like, okay, how about this? No. Our police will escort us away. Why? Let's read from 1 Chronicles 21:18. That was a terrible time when David made a terrible mistake. He decided to do a census. He counted his army, he counted his people, he counted because of that how many of them will pay, you know, taxes and everything. And Lord thought that it's going to be not really a good idea, and he said, well, you're going to be punished. And the angel of the Lord started to, brought the plague, and people started to die. And then the angel of the Lord turned against Jerusalem, and he was standing right above Jerusalem over the place called the threshing floor of Ornan, Jebusite, north of Jerusalem, between earth and heaven. And David saw him. And now the angel of the Lord had commanded God, the prophet, to say to David that David should go up and raise an altar to the Lord on the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. At that moment, Lord stopped the angel from this plague. But he said, that will be the place where I want you to build the altar for my name. And then David, you remember, David was not able to build this temple. Lord told him no, because you are a bloody person, your son will do. And you can go like little theological explanation that his son would be Jesus, who would build the real temple of the Lord, or Solomon, who built the physical temple of the Lord at the same spot. And by the way, it is the spot on which God commanded Abraham to sacrifice Isaac. According to some beliefs, that was the same spot on which Jacob slept while fleeing Esau and saw that dream, seeing the Lord on top of this ladder, or maybe on top of the altar in the heavenly temple. And then in 1 Kings 8, we read the prayer of Solomon during the dedication ceremony. And we are not going to read it all, but the meaning of this prayer basically goes to, Okay, Lord, I built the place for your name here, and do it this way. So whenever we do something wrong, and we come to this, we understand that, we come to this place, we ask for your forgiveness, so you will forgive us, and you will hear this prayer, and you will answer this prayer, and you will basically bless us. When you hear the prayer from this particular place, and during this prayer, he says, this house I have built 4 times. He says, in addition, 5 more times, this house, and he says 3 times, this particular place. And he's talking, like praying, standing toward the temple, and between the temple and him, there's an altar, which Lord commanded to build on the particular spot of Ornan the Jebusite. Now, do we have... Okay. That's approximately how City of David looked. Approximately. You know, you always have some freedom if you're an artist. So, that's the Temple Mount. Right here we have the Kedron Valley. Here we have the Central Valley, or Valley of Terrapion. Here is the Mount Zion. You know, it was not the city during the time of Solomon. It was outside. Right here we are... Assume that we stand on top of Mount of Olives, which is much higher than the Temple Mount. So, the temple, which Solomon built, which looked probably like that, and it looks like that was the east, west, north, south. So, Solomon was standing right here, praying in front of the altar, and that was the entrance to the temple. So, it had to look somewhere like that. Here was the spot of the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. Okay, later the temple was destroyed, and then it was rebuilt, and then the building was added up by King Herod and became the territory of the Temple Mount. Temple compound got much bigger, and because of that you have all these walls to keep it up. You know, not to fall apart. And the temple stood right here. East, west, north, south. Western wall is right here from the other side. Right here you have the Al-Aqsa Mosque. This is the Dome of the Rock, and it is not the mosque. It's the structure which covers the piece of stone which was the floor of the Holy of Holies in the temple. When the Lord, when David saw the angel of the Lord, he was standing right over this spot in between earth and heaven. And God said, right here, you have to build the altar for me. And when Solomon stood in front of this place, he was praying that if we will pray standing on this spot, please hear us. And Lord actually answered to him, yes, I heard your prayer. I answering positively at your prayer. And he, by the way, he was not only talking about Jewish people. He said, even if Gentiles will decide to come to this place because of your name and to pray from this place, please listen to their prayer and answer their prayer. So that's what's going on there today. You see this? Well, that's right here. This place, actually, at this spot. These guys basically playing soccer right here. These are Arabs. If you have any hesitation, better picture. That's the Temple Mount. That's the place they claim to be holy for them. Okay? They have fun there, which is nice. I mean, children need to have fun, but that's the holy place which God, creator of the universe, decided out of all huge space of our planet Earth, here you're going to build a place for my name. How about this? Do we have it? Yeah. Let's exercise some hatred. That's a holy place after all. How about this? These guys praying toward Mecca in this particular spot they praying toward their mosque, which is to the east, and Mecca farther east, southeast. Do you see what part of their body they turn to the place God has chosen to worship His name? If you think that these are only five ignorant people, how about this? So that's the reality which we don't think about really often, that they don't try to make known all around the world. They don't care about holiness of this place. What they do care about, they care that Jewish people will not get up and pray there, in order God will hear their prayers and will answer positively to their prayers. So because of that, when the Jewish people, well, these days, I mean these weeks, in our parliament, we started to talk about changing the law and letting the Jewish people to go up the Temple Mount, like particular periods of times, you know, Arab people has a right to pray there. We want to have a right to pray there as well. So they called it the Jewish people trying to take over the Temple Mount. And they call for intifada. Well, my wife, my kids, they have to travel to Jerusalem using public transportation on a daily basis and total unrest. Well, read the news. Like, get to some Israeli source of the news and you will have some details. Now, every day somebody is killed. For a while we got stones. I used to go to the Arab neighborhoods, drive through Arab neighborhoods. I don't mind to drive there even today. Well, I have a gun on my side. I have a gun in Israel, which I'm glad about. But I don't want to put my car in danger or people who are in my car in danger, because they will start smashing my windows. So what am I going to do? Shoot them? No, I don't want to shoot them. Actually, I got the gun with the prayer that I will never be able to get it out of the holster against people. I don't want it. I just need it in order to, like, God forbid, protect my family, myself, and maybe somebody on the street. So I don't drive there, but they go into our streets and start to do unrest there. They jump on us, they ride into the train stations trying to kill people. Like 2 weeks ago, the guy was riding his car on the train station, light rail train station, into the pavement. He waited until the train would arrive and open the doors. He killed 3-month-old baby, the daughter of the immigrants from Israel, from the United States, and a lady from the South America, who 22 years old lady from South America, who came to Israel and studied Judaism in order to become Jewish, religiously speaking, and to live in Israel. Like 2 days ago, there was another run. The guy was riding his van into the crowd of people on the train station, then proceed on the rails and got into another crowd of people, and then when he smashed his van, he got out with the metal stick and started to hit others. Like people, until the police officer shoot him down. And then the Mahmoud Abbas, the president of so-called Palestinian autonomy, which is really want to be seen by some as a country, called to the people, family of this guy, and said, well, I'm sorry it happened, you know, that your husband was a great hero. Like, what's going on? And everybody in the world said, Israel is killing Arabs. You know, this poor guy was hitting with his knife the window. Like, this ugly policeman could not open the window, that he will kill him. You know, and then they will take him, and then a year later they will release him in exchange to somebody else. They dare to kill the killer. Right in the process of killing, trying to kill. They're too bad. They have to be in jail. Just for flavor. Okay, before we finish, I want to read for you Psalm 83. God's word, we are believers, we need to know God's attitude toward all of this situation. Oh God, do not remain quiet. Do not be silent. And, oh God, do not be still. For behold, your enemies make an uproar. And those who hate you have exalted themselves. They make shrewd plans against your people. And they conspire together against your treasured ones. They have said, come and let us wipe them out as a nation. that the name of Israel be remembered no more. Guys, those who hate Israel, they are not Israeli haters. They are haters of God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, in which you and I put our faith. They are enemies of God. Few times, more, unfortunately more than a few times, I had to open my mouth when, you know, we are getting bombed from Gaza, and we gather to pray about the situation, about people who are dying both in Israel and in Gaza, and some really super spiritual hero face of Israeli heritage stands like and say, like, well, lack of Bible education and lack of logic, to my opinion. God told us to pray about enemies, so let's pray about Hamas. It's like, forgive me, idiot. These guys don't hate you and me personally. These guys hate Israel, and that's the indication that they actually hate God of Israel. So they are not your or mine enemies. They are God's enemies. And for the God's enemies, read Psalm 83, what God has to say about them. But before then, for they have conspired together with one mind. Against you they make a covenant. The tents of Edom. By the way, I couldn't resist myself. That's the ancient map of the region. That's today's Israel. Gates of, where's Edom? Right here. Jordan. And the Ishmaelites. Well, all Arabs say that they are Ishmaelites. Moab. Jordan. And Amalek. Northern Jordan, southern Syria. Philistia, which is the place of this sea people, which is Gaza. With inhabitants of Tyre, Lebanon, Assyria, Iraq, also joined with them. They have become a help to the children of Lot, Selah. Deal with them as with Midian, as with Sisera and Jabin at the torrent of Kishon, who were destroyed at Endor, who became as dung for the ground. Make their nobles like Oreb and Zeb, and all their princes like Zeba and Zalmunna, who said, let us possess for ourselves the pastures of God, oh my God. Make them like the whirling dust, like chaff before the wind, like the fire that burns the forest, and like a flame that sets the mountains on fire, so pursue them with your tempest, and terrify them with your storm. Fill their faces with dishonor, that they may seek your name, O Lord. Let them be ashamed and dismayed forever, and let them be humiliated and perish, that they may know that you alone, whose name is the Lord, are the most high over all the earth. My dear brothers and sisters, that's the Bible. That's God's word, God's inspired word. God says that those who hate Israel, despite how good or bad it is, despite how righteous or unrighteous Israel's decisions are, despite of their willingness or not willingness to be God's chosen people, God says, the hatred toward them is hatred toward me. And the author of the psalm, Asaph, is basically cursing them. Because this way, it will be the only way for the haters of God of Israel, and therefore God of haters of God of Israel as well, / haters of nation of Israel, to have a chance to get saved at the last breath. So that's biblical attitude toward the conflict. Emotions? Sure. Do I care about the Palestinian children? Sure. Does IDF kill Palestinian children intentionally? No. They do everything in order to prevent the killing of the civilians. Unfortunately, their Hamas guys, they don't fight in uniforms. They fight wearing normal, regular clothes. And they shoot their rockets from the schools, from the hospitals, from the mosques, from the crowds where people get together, because they want people to get killed. They don't care about them being killed. They want Israel to kill as much civilians as possible in order to be able to open their mouth about our unbearable attitude. And, well, you probably haven't heard about this. There were three young Jewish boys, 20 years old. Like, these Israeli IDF soldiers are 18 to 21 years old, most of them. During the war, you have older generation as well. But most of them are boys. Literally. They were lured into the booby-trapped building, which, like, to their death. Because Palestinian children were standing at the doors of this building and crying for help. So they ran to help them. The enemy, they wanted to kill these children. No? Yes? They ran to help these children to find their death. Because the children were luring them to their death. Well, that's what happens in reality. That's what the Bible has to say about it. And to finish it, Romans 11, verses 25 to 27. For I do not want you, Paul says, brethren, to be uninformed of this mystery, so that you will not be wise in your own estimation that a partial hardening has happened to Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles has come in. And so all Israel will be saved. Just as it is written, the deliverer will come from Zion. He will remove ungodliness from Jacob. This is my covenant with them when I take away their sins. 10 minutes break.